Good morning, everyone. My name is Joe, and I'll be your conference operator. Welcome to Nexaren's fourth quarter 2021 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. There will be a question and answer session after the speaker's remarks, and instructions will be given at that time. Nexaren issued its quarterly report on Monday, February 21st, after the market closed. If you did not receive the report, please contact the investor relations team, and they will email it to you. Please note that this call is for investors and analysts only. Questions from the media will not be taken, nor should the call be reported on. Any forward-looking statements made during this conference call are based on information that is currently available. Please refer to the disclaimer in the earnings release for guidance on this matter. Today, we are joined by Nexaren's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Alejandro Monzó, Zenobi's Chief Executive Officer, Tarek El-Sherif, and Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Abelardo Loscos, who will discuss the company's performance. Also on the call is Mr. Ramón Barreda, Nexaren's Investor Relations Officer and Corporate Finance Director. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Alejandro Monzó. Please go ahead.
Good morning and welcome. Thank you for joining our fourth quarter 2021 conference call. Before I go into the earnings results, I would like first to talk about this new and exciting stage of our company, newly named Angelo, which we announced in January, and to welcome Tarek, former CEO of Synnovet, who will be co-CEO along with me. As Angelo, we are incorporating Synnovet's advanced data and technological capabilities with Nexaren's strong credit expertise and institutionalization. This idea has been over 2 years in the making, and we are delighted to offer the full force of Angelo's diverse tech-based products to empower entrepreneurs and SMEs in Latin America, as well as providing more diverse and stable cash flow for our bondholders and upside for our shareholders. Tarek will talk more about Angelo in a few minutes. Then Abelardo will go into more detail on the financials. In the meantime, I'm pleased to tell you about Nexaren's excellent fourth quarter and full year 2021 results. We have another successful quarter despite the effects of the Omicron wave of the COVID-19 pandemic and the uneven economic recovery. As you saw in our report, total revenues improved 76% year-over-year. Operating income increased 87 million pesos, and net income totaled 88 million pesos, almost four times higher than the fourth quarter of 2020. These results once again show how Nexaren's quality originations, digitalized customer experience, diverse funding sources, and appropriately priced risk set us apart. Along with the added benefits from the Angelo business combination, we are in a strong position to continue to generate value for customers, bondholders, and shareholders going forward. I would also like to discuss key achievements for the fourth quarter and updates regarding originations, the expansion of lending as a service, and ESG initiatives. The pandemic-related fall in originations is now behind us. And in line with the economic recovery, originations have steadily increased for the fourth quarter in a row. We expect to see continued but prudent origination growth going into 2022. Nexaren has been able to maintain a quality portfolio. You can see this with our NPLs remaining stable at 6.4%, and the collection rate, which stood at around 200 million pesos per month, which is at pre-pandemic levels. In the fourth quarter, Nexaren closed its largest lending-as-a-service transaction to date. The managed portfolio now totals 1.9 billion pesos, five times that of 2020. These transactions leverage Nexaren's servicer capabilities and scalability without impacting our balance sheet. This is a fundamental part of our strategy that eliminates credit risk and diversifies the revenue stream. In our earnings report, this line of the portfolio is defined as portfolio under management. Regarding ESG, in November, Nexaren was named among the best Mexican companies by a joint initiative from Citibanamex, Deloitte, and the Tecnológico Monterrey, reaffirming the company's commitment to the development of the Mexican economy and its entrepreneurs. Mexico, in partnership with EPIC Lab, an organization at the Instituto Tecnológico Autónomo de México, better known as ITAM, that works to inspire young people with creativity, innovation, and entrepreneurships, continues to flourish. In the fourth quarter, MexRent supported the organization by giving talks on entrepreneurship and innovation, intensive courses, workshops, and other activities that will promote the entrepreneurial culture in Mexico. Other highlights from the year were the launch of our first sustainable product, the Value Green Lease, the formation of the MexRent Women's Committee, and receiving the CEMEFI Socially Responsible Company distinction for the second year in a row. In conclusion, we are very pleased with our fourth quarter results, given the economic recovery and new business possibilities as Tangelo, we expect margins and profits to continue rising through 2022. Also, as demand continues to grow, our diversified funding strategy is there to back it up. I will now turn the call over to Tarek to further expand in our future as Tangelo.
Thank you, Alejandro, and good morning, everyone. So my name is Tarek El-Sharif, and I'm the co-CEO of Tangelo and formerly the CEO of Zenobi. First, I would like to tell you a little bit of background about the other company in this combination, Zenobi. Zenobi is a Colombia-based fintech that has been operating for a little over 10 years. The company specialized in digital credit products, utilizing our proprietary technology platform and credit scoring. Our business lines included consumer lending, SME lending, and fintech as a service. Some milestones for the company. We have processed over 5 million applications last year, and last year we disbursed close to 1 million loans. We are backed by QED investors from Alexandria, Virginia, and some local funds and family offices. The idea of Tangelo was born a little over 2 years ago when Alejandro and I discussed forming a joint venture in Mexico. During that initiative, we realized the potential for both companies of a more complete union. This combination of an established finance company with strong corporate and institutional relationships and a nimble fintech with strong technological capabilities would put us in a very strong position in the Latin American market. So we decided to take the lead. The transaction ended up being an all-stock transaction, meaning there was no cash exchange. We are currently still pending approval from COFECE, but the legal integration of both companies is complete. We'll be reporting as Tangelo instead of MexRent in the coming quarter. So what is Tangelo? Tangelo will continue the heritage of its founding companies in being a financial technology company focused on credit. The key differences will be in the strategy, which will set us apart from other players in the market and which leverages our strengths. Number one, we'll be driving growth through a partnership strategy or through embedded financial products. This involves creating bespoke products for large corporates or institutions for their individual ecosystems. This strategy will allow us to have several efficiencies, such as significant reduction in marketing costs, operational efficiencies through integration with our partner, generally limited or no competition, and significant risk advantages due to access to private data from our partners. It is also a strategy that emphasizes the rationale for the combination. We have the relationships and scale that allow us to get these partnerships in combination with the agility and versatility to execute custom products and integrations. Number two, we are already working with a more diverse set of products than other players in the market, spanning both consumer and small business segments, which include everything from direct lending to merchant cash advance to point of sale lending. We are also offering technological solutions such as scoring as a service or white label products through our digital lending services business unit. This flexibility allows us to offer more complete solutions in our partnerships and further reflects our technological advantage. Thirdly, we have created a capital markets team, which will help monitor and standardize risk and pricing across the company and actively manage our product funding costs by looking at structuring and distribution options. Tangelo will pursue a balance sheet light strategy through both this unit and digital lending service. We believe this will reduce the overall risk of the business and help us focus on our core strengths, which are building, servicing, and scaling credit products. And because of all these factors, we can now be a regional company.
able to execute our offering throughout LATAM. Despite the strategy being born out of inbound interest from the market, we chose to validate our value proposition more thoroughly through the closing of some large transactions before formalizing the union. To that end, in the last 3 to 4 months of last year, we focused on looking for deals that would highlight the advantages of business model. We'll be announcing in the coming weeks some of them, but as a preview, we are about to go live in the coming weeks with a private consumer credit solution for one of the largest Mexican discount retailers. This retailer has over 700 stores across Mexico and over 2 million clients. This will be an unfunded transaction for Tendero. We have already gone live with a revenue-based lending product targeting SMEs for 2 of the largest payment terminal companies in Mexico. And finally, we have signed regional agreements to provide vendor financing solutions for 2 of the largest cement companies in LATAM. Now, let me address how the combination will affect the heritage business. We started working on a technological integration about 6 months ago. We focused on creating company-wide data storage, process automation, and applying analytics for better decision-making. We've already had some quick wins by reducing annual tech costs by approximately $300,000 on an annual basis, which represents roughly 30% of MexRent's technology budget for 2022. We are currently working on improving the origination funnel by automating pre-approvals for the new loan applications as well. Overall, we are all very excited about all the synergies and opportunities that this combination brings. We will maintain the core businesses such as leasing and lending as a service, but now with the benefit of improved automation and analytics, which will allow us to scale more efficiently. Additionally, the new business lines will let us not only maximize our current relationships, but diversify our revenue streams in a balance sheet-like manner so that we can continue to grow and increase profitability. I'm sure you'll have more questions about Tangelo, and we'll be more than happy to address them after the prepared remarks. I would like to now turn over the call to Abelardo. Thank you.
Thank you, Tarek, and to everyone else for joining us today. MexRent ended the fourth quarter in a solid financial position. Total revenue increased by around 76.5% for the quarter compared to the same period in 2020, ending at 692 million pesos. This reflects a continuation of the positive results that began in the second quarter of 2021. For the full year, revenues totaled 2.1 billion pesos, an increase of 41% year over year. This increase is driven by the expansion in our lending as a service business line, which represented 26% of total revenues as of December 2021. Gross income for the year increased by 84% compared to the same period of 2020, to 219 million pesos with a margin of 31.6%. Operating income for the period increased 193% compared to the same quarter of 2020 to 132 million pesos, driven by the expansion of the lending as a service product. Operating expenses increased by just 17.6% for the quarter, far below the growth in revenues. Net income stood at 88 million pesos, more than double the 40 million pesos last quarter, and nearly 4 times the 23 million pesos reported in the fourth quarter of 2020. For year end 2021, net income totaled 143 million pesos, resulting in one of the best years in MexRent's profitable history. At the end of the quarter, our cash position was healthy at 597 million pesos. Normalized financial debt stood at 88.5 billion pesos at the end of December 2021, highlighting our strategy of maintaining an efficient capital structure and favoring new fundings in Mexican pesos. We believe that our debt profile is prudent in the current context, with only 28% of our debt maturing in the short term and 71% due in 2024, from our international bond issuance. Of the short maturities, more than 1.3 billion pesos correspond to the Cebures program on the local capital markets, and most of the rest to the maturing October 2022 bond. As it has always been part of our strategy, we're actively working in managing our liabilities in a proactive manner, analyzing different alternatives in Mexico and abroad to keep improving and diversifying in an efficient manner our funding sources. We also focused on strengthening and diversifying our financial alternatives. Our strategy is to maintain an efficient capital structure and favor funding in Mexican pesos. Funding for the asset-backed lending business is covered for 2022 and 2023. The Credit Suisse warehouse facility usage rate is about 20%, and in terms of costs, represents an improvement of 400 basis points compared to historical funding. We're also analyzing funding alternatives locally and internationally to meet the maturity of the October 2022 bond for $30 million, with various options at hand. As we have communicated in the past, most of our short-term maturities correspond to the Segures program in the local capital markets, in which we have participated for the past 15 years. During 2021, we were able to refinance those maturities with strong demand despite the sometimes adverse market conditions. Moreover, the total portfolio reached 9.3 billion pesos at the end of December 2021, an increase of 2.4% compared to the same period of the previous year, reflecting the effectiveness of the strategies put in place over the past 12 months. The consumer goods and industrial sectors still represent most of our portfolio, with 38 and 26% share, respectively. By region, most of our portfolio is 71% located in Mexico City and the state of Mexico. Our focus remains on maintaining a healthy portfolio. The NPL ratio remains stable when compared to the end of 2020 and the past quarters of 2021 at 6.4%. Given the difficult economic environment over the past year, we are pleased with these results, and it reflects our prudent risk approach. Mexarent's loan loss reserve represents around 46% of the NPL amount. The reserve amount is reviewed quarterly with our auditor and is in compliance with our reporting standards, IFRS 9. This coverage is adequate since historic write-offs of our portfolio have represented less than 1%. As we previously mentioned, all credits are duly collateralized either directly through lease equipment or indirectly through mortgage guarantees, pledges, and others. In most cases, high levels of collateralization are met, resulting in 1.8 times coverage of capital at risk, which ensures that our portfolio remains well protected. This concludes my remarks. Thank you all for listening. I am now going to hand the call back to the operator for the Q&A.
We will now conduct a Q&A session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press the raise your hand button located at the bottom of the screen. If you're connected via telephone, please dial *9. We remind you that all lines have been placed on mute. When it is your turn to ask a question, you'll be given permission to speak. You will then be able to unmute yourself and ask your question. We will now pause for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Nicolas Riva. Please state your company name and ask your question.
Thanks very much, guys. This is Nicolas from Bank of America. Can you guys hear me well?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, great. Okay. Hi, Alejandro, Abelardo, guys. So I have there's three topics that I wanted to ask you about. Just in case my line gets disconnected and want to make all the questions at once, if that's okay. So first on liquidity, if you can tell us how much were cash collections and loan originations in the quarter. Just a note, I think it would be useful, if possible, to have this info in the quarterly reports going forward. I think it would be useful, especially right now, for people that are really focusing on the liquidity for these non-bank financials in Mexico. How do you plan to address the $100 million in debt maturities this year, considering the cash position of about $30 million that you have? So that's the first topic, liquidity. Second, on Tangel, on this merger, can you tell us if there's going to be an equity injection as part of the merger, either by the current shareholders of Mexarent or the current shareholders of Sinovi? I understand that the merger is not effective yet. If you can tell us any expectation regarding the timeline to get the approval from the COFECE in Mexico. And then finally, a question on a topic that doesn't impact just you, but I wanted to ask about securitizations and in particular the announcement from S&P saying that they're going to discontinue the ratings on securitizations in Mexico, given new requirements from the CNBV. What happens with the other rating agencies? How does this impact the ability of institutional investors in Mexico, such as the Afores, to buy this product? And in general, how this impacts your funding? Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you, Nicolas, for the questions. I will address the first one in terms of liquidity. In the fourth quarter, we originate on balance sheet, I will say, it was like around 450 million pesos. And also we originate off balance sheet close to 300 million pesos. Of those were funded by someone else. So in terms of origination that is in the balance, it was 400 million pesos. In terms of collections, as we have disclosed, we are depending on the month between 175 to 200 million pesos. So the collections were around 550 million pesos in the quarter. In terms of liquidity, on the cash position, as we have discussed, one of the strategies that we apply and we wanted with the warehousing facilities was to be very efficient with the cash balance in order to avoid all the negative carry figures. And as we have the warehouse, you can disburse the cash, that line, as the origination is coming. So as we discussed in previous calls, our strategy is to be more efficient in the amount of cash that we have in the balance. And that's in line with the reduction that we have presented. And also the levels that we have in 2019 and 2020, when the pandemic came in place because of the origination was low, was of the resources that were obtained from the 2019 bond. So I think that's in line with the strategy that we're following now. And in terms of the fundings, as you mentioned, we have close to $100 million in terms of short-term maturities. Of those, $1.3 billion correspond to the Segures program. That's the program that we have been participating in the local market since 2006. And we have been able to refinance those maturities very efficiently, even in the pandemic. So those maturities are all over the year. I will say not evenly, but very close to. So we don't have a specific maturity of that amount in any point of time. It's around every month. And we have been able to refinance those, even now with the turmoil in the markets because of the noise, we have been able to do so. Even the last months, we were able to refinance the amount that we have and even a little bit more because, as you know, we have a spare capacity in our short-term program. And in terms of the main refinancing that we have this year is the portion of the 2022 bond that was not tendered, and that's that matures in October. For that in particular, we are analyzing different alternatives in the local markets and international markets with local banks and internationally, not necessarily in the debt capital market. So we are seeing different alternatives. And as you know, we always like to have alternatives in place very, very well in advance. So we feel confident that we will have a right strategy for that moment in time.
Abelardo. Sorry, one follow-up. So you said you had cash collections of roughly 550 million pesos in the quarter, I understood.
Correct.
And then originations of roughly 400. So you collected more than you originated in this quarter, but yet the cash position came down a bit in the quarter. What was the reason for that then?
Actually, the thing is that, we have like different expenses during the year. And I think the cash position basically, as we discussed, we have also some like transactions that were funded were supposed to be afterwards for the off balance sheet and taking out. So I think the movement, I think it's basically some different movements that we had. Nothing in particular there. As you know as well, we always, for example, for the position in December, also we pay the coupon in January and that amount. So we have also additional collections that came like by the beginning of the year. So that's maybe the part of the movement over there, and some originations as well that were for the beginning of the year.
And then Abelardo, and then just to confirm, then you expect to refinance pretty much all of the 1.3 billion pesos from the Cebures in the correct. In the local market as well.
That's correct, Nicolas, because that's part of the program. As you know, you remember that we have that program of 1 billion pesos and we expanded to 1.5 billion pesos because of the demand we normally see in that market. And we have been able to refinance those with the same base of investors that we have as of today. So that is being refinanced since 2006. And basically those are refinanced month over month. On like, as I was saying, they are very well like reported all over the year. And we have all over the year different maturities and we're able to refinance those. So yes, that 1.3 million, we expect to be refinanced in the local debt markets, as we have been doing so far. I will take your third question and then I will handle the answer on Tangelo to Alex and Tarek. On the third question on the S&P, well, for what we know as of today, we are in communication very closely with our credit ratings, that is S&P, Fitch and HR ratings. And we have not received any signal that there will be a stop on the rating so far. So we cannot comment on that. And actually, we have just finished, I think, we're in the process of the annual review very recently. So I don't have any additional information on that.
And on the securitization itself, and that was the announcement of S&P. I mean, as you know, we have we don't have any securitization outstanding in the market as we speak. And we're not expecting to issue securitization as part of our financing programs for this year. In terms of your question about the equity injection on Tangelo, we are planning on doing an equity round sometime between the second and third quarter of this year, potentially by existing or new investors, but we'll keep you posted on that one. And finally, in terms of the expectation for the closing of the transaction, we are thinking that potentially between 30 and 60 days. As you know, it not depends on us, it depends on COFECE. We don't see any risks on COFECE approval given the concentration, but it's a process that needs to be met. And you know, it could take anywhere between 1 to 2 months before we can actually close the transaction.
Alejandro, thanks very much for that. So on the equity raise, you said so there could be an equity raise later this year. Anything you can share in terms of the size of that?
Not yet, but we expect to have something significant there.
And that will be done by the current shareholders of Mexaren, or Sinovi, or both?
Yeah. I mean, it will be open, but we expect to have some external participants joining the company.
Okay, thanks. And the last question. So you said that right now you don't have any securitization outstanding.
No,
you don't plan to do that either. Just understand the rationale there. Like Unifin is your peer and they do have some securitizations. It's a fund source that they have used. In your case, given that you have your assets, as you said, are well collateralized, it's a good asset. Why haven't you used this fund mechanism?
We decided to go more with the warehouse facilities. As you know, I mean, these are sort of a private securitization, if you will. They're very similar, it's just in the private market. And once the warehousing period ends, an exit of that warehouse could be a securitization. That one could be private or public, could be a secure funding. It's still a few years till we gotta make that decision. But yes, I mean, we prefer to go to a larger transaction with these warehouses than to be doing a small securitization in the market as some other guys do.
Okay, thanks very much, Alejandro and Abelardo, for all the answers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nicolas.
Our next question comes from Artem Sunyaev. Please state your company name and ask your question.
Good morning. Can you?
No, we can't hear you, Alan.
I think you're in mute, Ada, maybe.
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
Now we can hear you, yes.
Yeah, yeah, great, great, guys. Yeah, so sorry for this technical issue. First of all, thank you very much for this call and for taking my question. I have a few questions on my side. The first one is kind of clarification what Nicholas Riva asked you previously. You said the total collections were 5.50 in this quarter, right? So it's kind of amortization of your portfolio, right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, it does not include your interest income for the quarter, right? As I previously see.
No, that includes everything. That's cash flow. That includes everything, principal and interest.
Right. Okay, principal in interest, right. And coupon on your Eurobonds, it does, it is not included into your interest expenses that are reported in income statement. Am I correct?
No, it is included.
It is included, yeah.
It's included, okay. Then guys, when I do, kind of simple math, I'm still a bit confused about your cash and cash equivalents drop, because I think I see that the interest income is much higher than interest expenses, right? And your administrative costs are very moderate, and I as I understand, there are no great debt repayments during the quarter, right? So I'm not sure that I'm happy with your reply on why cash and cash equivalents dropped. It would be great if you could give a bit more detailed clarification why cash balance decreased, and probably if it is possible, you could share with investors, with analysts, how maybe you cash. Your cash flows are accounted, and some more transparent any more transparent clarification of your cash flows will be very helpful given current bond prices, given current environment on whole sector. Yeah, this is my first actual question. From my side.
So, Artem, in terms of the cash flow, obviously we have the collections, and then we have obviously the origination. What we have, and we have the administrative expenses as well. But the coupon payment, basically, that is our bigger payment and cash flow payment that we have in the year is January and July. But for example, in December, we have an amortization of $2.5 million that was for a line that we have with a bilateral line, another bilateral amortization. So we have different payments along the year and different interest payments along the year. Obviously, on the income statement, what is reflected, obviously, for the coupon payment, the corresponding part for the period is reflected there. So there's obviously some movements in cash that are different from the movements around the income statement, because it depends on how they are originated. But yeah, we'll take your consideration in order to have some present something in terms of cash flow that is a little bit more clear.
Would you able please to share some calcs from your side, how net cash flows were resulted, and how you came to the cash and cash equivalent balance for the 2021? Is it possible?
Yeah, we will work on that, and we can share it with you guys. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, great. My second question on your Cyburus program. As I suppose, and you mentioned that is a key strategy, right, to refinance upcoming maturities. Could you indicate what is the state of the market as so far in this segment? I mean, how liquid is this market as so far? I suppose you have bonds. What are the average yields and price levels for these bonds, and what are the key investors that are willing to participate in this market? So Any color on the topic will be very helpful.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, actually, we have been participating in this market for almost more than 10 years now, and it's like a commercial paper program. The thing is that we have maturities and renewals all every month along the year. And basically, as this is nothing new, we have been with this program for a long period of time. We usually have 1 billion pesos in this program in the closing of last year. We increased it to 1.5 billion this year, and we have around of 1.3 billion dispersed. Normally, the investors for this commercial paper are private wealth clients and institutional investors that are doing it through different brokerage houses. And we have a very attractive rate there. It's close to 7% in pesos. And the rate has not moved since a long time ago. I think the thing is that these clients know the company very well. We have also meetings with them like periodically every quarter to present the results of the company. And as I was saying, we have a very good reading of the market because every month we have renewals. So if you see that something is coming up, you will like very quickly you will hear about that. So I think we are very comfortable with refinancings, and we have been refinancing even in the topic of the vulnerability when the pandemic came in. We were able to refinance the program as well. So we're confident that we'll be able to do so.
Okay, sure. And probably the last question from my side on your portfolio quality. I see that NPL is around 6.4 as of the year end, right? But I'm a bit worried about loan reserve ratio that is close to 40%, right? My first part of this question, you on the previous conference call, you mentioned that close to the year end, some kind of committee is organizing, right? And they decide on any possible write-offs. So I understand that there will not be any write-offs, right? And how do you think you should manage this NPL in the next few quarters? Will auditors, for example, will happy to classify these loans as NPL, right, as a stage 3 loan, right? And the second part of the question, what is your strategy on the loan reserve? Don't you think that it is a maybe better way to make some hedges, right, against any probable deterioration of the client's quality, of the client's behavior? What's your target level for the loan reserve? This is my final question.
Yeah, a couple of things there, Artem. The way we calculate the loan reserve, it's in line with IFRS 9, which it's the accounting procedures that we use, and it's validated by our auditors. And it basically analyzes loan by loan in terms of collateral, expected loss, not only the ones that are NPLs, but basically the full portfolio. And what we've seen historically is that our write-offs are less than 1%. And the reason for that is 100% of our transactions are collateralized, 100%. And as an average, we have 1.8 times of collateral coverage. So that means that if a transaction goes bad, it will become an NPL, but with time, we'll recover the asset, monetize the asset, and recover principal. There are some cases, obviously, when that doesn't happen, where for some reason we are unable to recover the asset or the value of the asset is below the amount of loan. However, historically, that's been minimal, given the way we analyze transaction and analyze collateral. So that's why when we've done all these analysis hand on hand with our auditors, we've agreed that this is an adequate level of provisions for the company.
Okay, I see. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Alan Diaz. Please state your company name and ask your question.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, I'm Alan from Appalachia Analysis. These are my questions. The managed portfolio provided as a service went from 683 million in the third quarter to 1954 million in the fourth quarter. Could you comment on this increase? Currently, the managed portfolio represents 17% of the total portfolio. Is there a goal set on what percentage of the portfolio the managed portfolio should reach? How do the cost and service of this type of portfolio compare to the traditional operation of MexRen? And finally, how have you perceived the market in recent weeks as a result of Cyril's default? And how do you think this could put pressure on access and the cost of your funding sources? Above all, with the maturity of the DOCUFO bond, 9.2%. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to take the first two or three, and I'm going to let Abelardo speak about the final one. So in terms of the increase of our lending as service business, yes, we are very happy with that. Actually, that's been something that we've been telling investors that as one of our main strategies since the last couple of years. Fortunately, as we have increased the number of participants on this market, we've been able to increase the value of those transactions. These are transactions that we originate and then we distribute the risk to a number of investors, in essence, making this a fee business for MexRen and getting rid of the credit risk. So it's very efficient from an ROE perspective, very efficient also from a capital structure perspective, and it's a way just to leverage our existing servicing capabilities. Yes, around 70% of the portfolio, of the total portfolio, it's on our books. And the reason for that is that the lending of service business just begun a little bit over a year ago and has been gaining traction in the past months. And we expect this figure to continue increasing as the percentage of the total portfolio going forward, hence reducing the balance sheet or the capital consumption of our business. The cost of service in this portfolio, or let's say the marginal cost of service in this portfolio, it's minimal. Because at the end of the day, we have the capabilities to serve the on-balance sheet portfolio, and with very little effort, we can serve the off-balance sheet portfolio as well. So that does not represent additional cost of servicing, since, as you know, most of our transactions are, it's a discrete universe of transaction. So there is no additional people required to service this new line of business, which is our lending and service portfolio. With that, I'm gonna allow you to speak a little bit about what we are feeling in the market given the recent turnover and the expectation for our funding sources.
Yes, thank you, Alex. Hi, Alan. Yeah, in terms of the market, yes, there has been a lot of turmoil because of the things that we all know. I think since this started, because this is not new, it has been around for the last couple of months. We have been trying to, well, I think we have a different business model. We are in a different segment with different clients. So I think, yes, sometimes it's like the comparables are like closer, but I think in our case, we have proven that we have done things differently and also the market is different as well. That being said, obviously there's a contagion in the price of the bond. It has decreased over the last weeks. Yeah, obviously the decrease has been lower than with other companies in the sector, but what we believe is like those movements have been with low liquidity in the bond. So I think we are focusing what we have to do, that is like in the business, in Tangelo, that we are very excited with this new opportunity. And we think with the diversification, as Alex just mentioned, the diversification that we have in our income statement now is different for 1 year ago because of the lending as a service. And going forward, I think the diversification is going to be greater. So I think we're focused on that, and that's what we have to do as management.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan.
Our next question comes from Adrian Garcia. Please state your company name and ask your question.
Hello, everyone. This is Adrian Garcia from Invesco. Thank you very much for taking my question. Congratulations on this new merger. My questions are the following. One, how do we think about your company going forward in terms of footprint? Is it going to be most of the origination of the portfolio out of Mexico? Is it going to be out of Colombia? If you could give us a sense as to, or other jurisdictions, if you can give us a sense, that would be helpful. And number two, you mentioned that as of today that you have most of your funding needs for the year already in place. However, I would like to hear your thoughts in terms of your funding costs. I would assume despite of the Crédito Real contagion, but there's a hiking cycle going on both in Colombia and Mexico and the rest of Latin America. How does that impact your business? Are you repricing your products to your clients, and how long do you think it takes to replace that? And if you could comment on your expectation of on profitability given the these higher funding costs. Thank you.
Sure, Adrian. Well, in terms of the footprint, a lot of the origination will continue to come from Mexico and in a lesser extent Colombia. However, as Tarek mentioned, we've already closed a number of partnerships that will give us or are giving or which are giving us access to closed ecosystems. And many of those companies or large corporates operate not only in Mexico and in Colombia, but in other geographies across Latin. So as we continue to penetrate those ecosystems, you should expect to see some geographic diversification. To different Spanish-speaking countries in Latin America. At the beginning, the numbers shouldn't be that big, but you should expect to see a growth in the back end of this year that will continue next year, again, as we effectively penetrate these new relationships in a number of geographies.
And if, as you, a couple of follow-ups on that, can you elaborate what do you mean by closed ecosystems? And then if you do go into other countries, would you be opening offices there, or what are your operational capabilities to deliver those solutions to clients in other countries where you're not currently present?
Yes, I mean, penetrating an ecosystem means that our strategy on this new product is not to go direct to the customers, either SME or consumer, but rather close a strategic relationship with a large corporate that has access to a closed ecosystem. Let's imagine, for instance, a cement company that sells through a network of 5,000 distributors across Mexico, for instance. Well, the idea is to get in between this large corporate and the network of distributors to provide financing within the ecosystem, getting access to private data on the ecosystem. So in essence, the customer acquisition cost is very small because you are serving a closed ecosystem. The way we plan on growing geographically is precisely by expanding those closed ecosystems from Mexico to different geographies. And again, the strategy of Tangelo is to do this in a very lean way, meaning if we go to a different geography, the idea is not to open a new office, but rather to partner with somebody in there that could help us out with the serving scene of those transactions. We'll be taking charge of the customer experience, credit, and all the logic behind collections.
Got it.
And in terms of your second question, Adrian, in terms of the refinancing, well, as you know, the warehousing facility that we have with Credit Suisse, we are, it's still under use. It's only on the 20%, and it's in the cost is in Mexican pesos. And as we have disclosed, the cost is around 400 basis points lower than we have on previous financings. That being said, for the year going forward and for refinancing alternatives, we are looking for different things. And still, I think we can believe we can take a cost that are lower to what we have as of today. And well, clearly we will depend on the market going forward, but we are analyzing different alternatives and we'll keep you posted as we move forward.
And in terms of your last questions that had to do with the increase in rates that we're seeing across the region, Yes, we are analyzing closely to see when and in which measure it makes sense to pass part of that hike in prices to the end client.
Okay, but as of now, you haven't implemented any repricing. You haven't passed on anything.
There's been some, but it hasn't been across the board. We've done it in part of our products, meaning basically the lending as a service market, which it's very, since you originate and fund at precisely at the same time, it's very important to have the spread locked at the moment you close. So in that particular set of our portfolio, we've already passed that increase. So that's why you've seen the improving profitability in the quarter.
Thank you all, appreciate it.
Thank you again.
Our next question comes via the Q&A chat feature. It is from Arturo Galindo. He says, hi all, can you provide color on your origination in Mexican pesos during the fourth quarter? And how is that trend going into the first quarter? He also asks, how have you seen the Segura rollovers so far? And what are the alternatives to address the US $30 million 22s? Thank you.
I think on origination, well, we already answered that before. And in terms of the trend for this year, I think it's looking a little bit better. It's trying to pick up, still a little bit slow, but we are seeing a better trend. And I think the second round, the Segures, I think it was already answered, Joe, as well, that the renewals are keeping to every month we have renewals, and we're seeing a very strong behavior on that front. So that's where confident the refinancing for those maturities will be completed this year, as we have been doing over the past years.
And in terms of the last part of the question, we are looking at a number of alternatives that are in place for the refinancing of the piece of the 2022 that it's due on October, and we will be making a decision long before that maturity comes on which of the alternatives we're going to be taking. And also important to mention, we are seeing a significant pickup in the origination of the lending and service business, which it's great news, because at the end of the day, it's just profits flowing through the income statement without the requirement of additional cash or indebtedness to fund those transactions. So we are very happy to that trend. I'm very happy to see that the market is accepting really well this initiative that we launched a few months, or actually almost a year ago.
The next question comes via the chat feature again. This is from an anonymous attendee. Congratulations for your results. Is there any liquidity risk to pay the $30 million from the 22 bonds if the market is totally closed?
We believe not. That's why we're working on different alternatives ahead of time. So we're working toward that. So we don't see any problem in that maturity.
One more chat question from another anonymous attendee. Can you use Credit Suisse warehouse facility to pay the 22s?
As the line structures of today, no, because it's a warehousing facility that you can disburse as you like, put new originations there. But well, there can be a dialogue on that space, like to use that space of the line going forward. But for the moment, that's not one of the alternatives we are analyzing.
And it's very important to consider in that front that if you see the trend of collections that we have, and the fact that new originations are fully funded by our existing warehouse facilities, even in the absence of any financing, clearly the company should be able, just through natural collections, to have the cash in hand needed to pay that maturity without much problem. So I just gotta be very clear on that one as well.
Our next question comes from Andrew Size. Please state your company name and ask your question.
Hello. Hey, BFAM Partners, Andrew Says. Thanks for taking the question. On the DFC facility, are you actually drawing on that, or do you have plans to draw on that warehouse facility? And how does it compare in terms of rate to the Credit Suisse facility? And also, I have a question about the on-balance sheet loan portfolio. I see that on a sequential basis, it declined to 9.3 billion in the fourth quarter from 9.6 billion in the previous quarter. And just wanted to see what the reason for that decline was. Like, were you not able to find adequate, you know, origination targets or, you know, adequate demand for leasing? And if you look forward to the end of this year and to the end of 2023, you've been consistently growing that portfolio, and just want to get a sense, do you have a broad idea of how large that on-balance sheet portfolio could be by the end of the year and the end of next year?
Sure, Andrew. I'm going to take the last two, and I'm going to let Abelardo speak about the DFC line. In terms of the reduction on balance sheet portfolio, that has to do mainly with the fact that sometimes we originate a portfolio that it's in the process of being sold or distributed in our lending as service business, but it crosses the month, so it ends up being an on-balance sheet portfolio, and later on it becomes off-balance sheet. So that's the reason, and you should expect to see that happening often as we continue distributing. Sometimes the distribution release of that on-balance sheet portfolio to the off-balance sheet doesn't come at the time we close the transaction, but actually a few weeks or months later. So that's the first one. In terms of what you should expect to see on portfolio growth, we continue to be very prudent and seeing how the market is behaving. We, as we've always done, we're prudent in the risks we take, and we are going to continue targeting the risk that we like. If that means growing our balance sheet portfolio, then it will grow since we already have the funding facilities in place, but always making sure that the risk profile of the portfolio remains the way we like it. And second, it very well be the case that if we continue increasing our network of investors for our balance sheet portfolio, that we will be seeing the marginal increase on the off balance sheet could be larger than the marginal increase on the off balance sheet portfolio as we continue to pursue our balance sheet light strategy going forward.
And on your first question, Andrew, on the DFC line, we already signed the loan agreement. We are just working some closing checklist things that are minor. So we are planning obviously to use this line. This line is very good. It's in US dollars, but as you know, DFC normally gives you very good terms. So in terms, when you apply the hedging, it's quite close to what we have in Credit Suisse, but it's a very good line, and it has a very good maturity as well, because as you remember, it's $45 million. That you have like 2 years of grace period in terms of principal, and then amortize on a linear way until 10 years. So that's a very good line, and obviously that will be used as well. And we already are also in conversations with them for also not only for the asset-based lending, for also additional financing.
Understood. Thank you. And just one more question on the 2022 bond for the 30 million. Do you think that given the state of the market, most likely you're going to need to refinance that on a secured basis?
That's one of the alternatives that we are reviewing, but we are having others that are unsecured as well. So we will see how the market moves, Andrew, but we are analyzing both options. But yeah, let's see what we're open to analyze what it's better in terms of efficiency and in terms of rates.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We have not received any further questions at this point, so that concludes our question and answer session. Thank you. I would now like to hand the call back over to Alejandro Monzo for some closing remarks.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. Please feel free to reach out to us if you have any additional questions or concerns. We appreciate your interest and look forward to speaking with you again. Thank you very much and have a good day.
That concludes today's call. You may now disconnect.